Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Hunt, Lift, Eat podcast brought to you by Hunt, Lift, Eat Official. I'm Carter McKenzie, running host tonight with the one and only Perry Eisner coming at us from North Carolina. What's up, man?
Not much, buddy. Glad to be here.
Good to have you back on. Haven't talked to you in a long time.
Yeah. It's been a minute. Excited for tonight's show. Gonna get into all things food plotting, which is always right up my alley.
Yeah, land management and food plotting, and you know, this one applies. I figured this would be a good conversation for both of us to get on, especially. I want you to hear what our guests tonight have to talk about with their awesome company, especially for your farm up there in Virginia, Perry. So I think this will be good.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm stoked.
And joining us tonight, we've got the two Jeffs. We've got Jeff Nagel and we've got Jeff Vanderheiden joining us. And Jeff Nagel and Vanderheiden are both associated with the awesome company Buck Fever Seed Co. And Jeff Vanderheiden is the owner and operator. And Jeff Nagel, how would you explain your association with Buck Fever?
It's kind of beyond a pro staffer. I guess you could just say we're just really good friends, and I help him. He bounces things off me. I bounce things off him. And it's really just beyond a pro staff position. But that's, I guess, if you wanted to give it a title, it's kind of more or less just a pro staff.
Heck yeah. And Jeff Vanderheiden, welcome, man. Glad to have you on here. Owner and operator of Buck Fever Seed Company.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, man. It's funny. As soon as Jeff Nagel and I got linked up, we got linked up about 2 years ago via a Facebook group called No-Till Poor Man Food Plot. And I was about 5 minutes out of college and I had zero money. And we had just bought this farm. My wife and I did this small farm here in North Georgia. And I was like, wow, poor man, no-till, like no equipment. Sign me up. That's right up my alley. That's what I'm talking about. That's where I'm at right now. And got to asking some questions. And Jeff was one of the few helpful people on that group who kind of fielded a lot of questions that I had. I probably asked his ear off, but and we developed some really successful food plots over the last 3 years here via his help through the no-till food plot method. And then he actually is the one who turned me on to your company, Jeff. So that's pretty cool connection. Small world there.
Yeah, it works out well that way.
Yeah, 100%, man. That's awesome. Well, we're stoked to have you guys on here. And Nagel, we're going to jump into the no-till method, which I know you are a proficient at, and something I've tried to pick up and learn along the way. And Jeff, we want to talk about your company, man. So, you know, give us the rundown. How did you jump into Buck Fever Seed Co. and jump into putting food plot seeds together and deciding what packages go with what and everything in between?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing kind of started, just basically based off the passion. It was one of those deals where, growing up as a bow hunter and stuff like that, being able to, you know, do some work on some properties, when I finally was able to start doing work on properties that I had permission on or you know, a lease property or whatever, I was able to start putting food plots and stuff in the ground. And it just, it really intrigued me, the whole, you know, sweat equity side of things is basically just, what I like. I mean, you put in the work year round to try to get that result, you know, and so the food plotting thing just really took off for me. I liked what it did. It enables people to, you know, hold and sustain food sources on property and not only help the whitetails, but help all kinds of wildlife with different things that you can do with food plots. So, it just one of those things that was a passion. And I actually, was interested in, I kind of dug into the seed side of it a little bit more. And I, checked into being some dealers even for some different companies out there and things like that. And honestly, I just found myself to be really motivated and kept digging into it. And the further I got into it, the more I wanted to, you know, check into starting something my own. And that's what I did, and start experimenting with, different seed blends and searching for things that I felt like or more beneficial and things like that. And that's kind of the progression of it, how it went. And so, yeah, basically started it up just based off of that. And I'm one of those guys, when I get something in my head, I kind of nerd out about it. I don't know how y'all are, but, you know, I really, really dig into it and start, you know, doing as much research as I can about certain things and whatever. And that was the food plot side of it for me. So, and it's taken off from there.
Yeah, I didn't realize how complex it was until I really got into it. And Jeff was asking me, like, hey, what's your soil sample look like? And I was like, I don't know. My dirt's red, man. It's not great. But like, what's your pH? What's your, you know, organic material and or organic matter? And, you know, all these things that I really didn't comprehend going in there. And yeah, you can really nerd out on it, right? There's a lot of data points and there's a lot of things to consider when you're looking at something like this.
Yep. And there's a lot of people that have a lot of good information out there and a lot of different things that you can learn, you know, from the agricultural world on different, you know, seed varieties and different things like that. And so, yeah, you can really dig deep on all of that.
That's awesome. And, Nagel, I guess, did you jump in and you help troubleshoot and you help, you're the groundhog for a lot of these seed blends and things like that?
Sometimes. I mean, he sent me a few things to test out. One was the Quick Start Clover. That was a product he came up with. We actually came up with together because we have one product, a clover product called the Foundations Trio. That's an awesome, awesome blend, but it's slow to establish. And there's a whole lot of people who are impatient. Obviously, this day, it's like everybody wants instant gratification. So we came up with a seed blend that he ended up sending to me, and I tested it in a 10 by 10 area in my yard, and I planted it in mid-May in Virginia next to my house. And 8 weeks later, in throughout the summer, planted it basically, you know, late spring, early summer, and by 8 weeks later, it was full and plush and green and just awesome. And we were like, we got to take off with that if it's going to grow like that quickly, you know, quickly and establish that well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's one of the products I planted this year of y'all's, that Quick Start Clover and the 10 ring, using that no-till method, which, you know, has worked out phenomenally well. I planted back in September and it's already coming up. I'll send you guys some pictures tomorrow after work. And I've been more than impressed, especially with how little rain that we've gotten. It's still come up. Mm-hmm. It's been coming up better under the areas that had better thatch where I cut it after I seeded. Mm-hmm. But it's still coming up and it's greening up and I've got pictures of deer all in it. So I've been more than pleased there.
So would you say that the no-till method with the thatch on top saved your plot this year? Because you're just talking about how dry you are.
100%. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And it's really bizarre because we get a ton of rain here. We get over 50 inches of rain here a year. And this is very abnormal and very bizarre time of year. It's usually something we never even have to consider. And it's been so dry since early August. It's just been brutal. It rained right when I planted, right when I seeded, and then that was it. And ever since then, it's been dry, dry, dry.
Well, I'm glad to hear that it's still making it.
Yeah, heck yeah. Jeff Vanderheiden, you know, talking about this no-till method with Jeff a little bit, was that ever something that you were, you know, gunning for or considering when you created this company? Is that something you identified as a kind of niche that you wanted to target for guys with less equipment or, you know, maybe smaller areas that don't require a big, heavy equipment to get in there and till up the earth? Or,
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that I set out just to do that, but I definitely, you know, there's definitely a call and a need for that kind of thing. And that's why we have, you know, dove into that a little bit and done some research on certain things that you want to plant for that style of planting. And, you know, I've also, there's certain situations and certain soil types that it's beneficial to do it that way. I mean, there's a lot of people obviously that work the dirt and still have good success with their soil. But in some places where you have, you know, not very good soil, or sandy soil is a troublesome one, or, you know, like a hard packed clay or different stuff like that, where you want to do a no-till type message and build that organic matter in the soil, there's a ton of benefits to doing it that way. So we have, you know, geared some of the mixes. Punchless is a good one for that. That quick start clover works well for that. It works really well in some of your soil types that are not as good. Your pH isn't as good, or your organic matter isn't as good. There's just a ton of different things that it can be for. So every circumstance is different, but yeah, we have definitely geared a couple things towards that method just because it's beneficial to do that in a lot of places.
Yeah, I like that. I like the comprehensive approach that your company's taken, and y'all kind of have a couple different methods of how to do food plots covered, and, you know, as versatile as possible is kind of what's going to be the most effective for everybody's varying situations across the country, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was one of the things I really appreciated right from the beginning. You know, you can tell when somebody else is being authentic, right? And I appreciated that about Jeff right at the beginning, because I came to him and I was like, hey, dude, I don't know anything about this. Like, this is all new to me. And, you know, he could have been like, oh, well, you need to buy this and this and this and this, right? And, you know, I may have done that, right? But he didn't. Like, he started off and was like, all right, what are your goals, right? What are we trying to accomplish here? We need to get a soil test, right? He could have just sent me a link to buy these seeds or the most expensive seeds, or like, whatever, you know, 1,000 pounds of ryegrass seeds, and I wouldn't have known the difference. And, you know, we got the soil test and I sent him a picture of it, and he was like, ugh, that's not great. And I was like, I appreciate that. Like, that is an honest guy right there. Like, that is nice. He was like, oh boy. And I was like, oh great, here we go. But yeah, you know, we just have acidic soil down here, and, you know, I wasn't in a place to, you know, lime is not an immediate fix. And he explained the entire process to me, and I never felt, you know, as a teacher, I appreciated him taking the time to explain the whole process to me and keep me included in the conversation. And yeah, now here we are. So that was pretty cool.
You're welcome. I think what you're also alluding to there, and I'll make this point, is that we can't just take raw. I mean, there's very few parts of the country where you're going to take a soil sample and it's going to be 6.5 pH, and you're going to be like, organic is 6% or more, and you're going to be like, oh, I can go plant anything that's going to be successful. Most of us are going to start in that low fives to, you know, possibly high fours, and we got work to do. You know what I mean? And you're not going to be able to grow the brassica, you know, a Whitetail Magazine type picture food plot the first year. You know, you're just not going to. There are some products, and we have one now that will help with that. And help unlock some of the nutrients in the soil, and Jeff can expand upon that, but because he knows more about the product than I do. But you're not going to go out there and have a, you know, just a lush, beautiful food plot the first year of brassicas right off the bat. You got to do the work first, and the soil just doesn't change overnight, especially that good old red clay Georgia dirt, right?
Yeah, sure adds its challenges, man. Yep. Breaking down, I want to get into all your products for sure. And I want to talk about the success, and I want to talk about what I planted of y'all's this year too. But if y'all were to break down, like if you were going to instruct someone like you taught me, Nagel, you know, no-till versus till, right? Let's start with no-till. And what is like the, you know, the down and dirty like step process that someone with limited equipment would want to start with, and maybe why those steps?
I know you're gonna want me to take this one, Jeff, right? So this is funny. I don't have big equipment either, and you know that, Carter. But Jeff, when I first started talking to Jeff, I had a 4 gallon, I still have the same two, three years ago at this point, 2.5 years ago, I have a 4 gallon backpack sprayer. Okay. I had access
to a four-wheel. That's all I use.
I had an ATV that could get me in and out to places. And I've got I had a little green hand spreader that you get at Tractor Supply, and then I had a chest spreader that was made by Solo. And that was that's all I had. And I met Jeff. That's all I had 2.5 years ago. And that's the only thing I've added since then was a lawn roller. But if you were to break down the whole process, obviously, number one, get a soil sample. Got to get the soil sample. If you have a plans in doing this, you know, a food plot, don't wait until August to get the soil sample. Do it in the springtime. Do it, you know, scouting around. Do it when you're shed hunting. Do it, you know, do it earlier in the year so then you can start the process. And the next part of the process, I'm going to say, is, you know, start doing lime. After that, or do whatever you need to do based upon the results of the soil sample. So, and then if you're in that early part of the year, majority of us be is doing this stuff in the spring and then starting in the beginning of the growing season, is what I do, or what I started doing, was basically doing about 2 to 3 sprays with glyphosate before the season, so I could hit those different weeds that were coming up and start killing that seed bed, and that's in the soil. So I'd spray 2-3 times once every month while you're correcting the pH and the lime with the lime, and then basically once you get to where you're, you know, planting time, and it varies around the country. All I've done in the past is I've sprayed those 3 times, and then the last time I spray about 10 to 14 days before I want to plant, and then I'll plant and seed right into that dead standing vegetation, and I'll go back and either use the lawn roller, or if it's a little bit taller, I'll mow it down with my riding lawn mower. I mean, this thing's from probably 1989, okay? It's still... but it still works, and it's the one I use for the food plots because I can run over the sticks and not have to worry about it, you know, jacking up my mower or anything. But the first food plot I did with Jeff Seed, which was the pictures I sent you, Carter, of the Brassica mix, and it was the most beautiful food plot I've ever had. All I did was seed it right into the dead standing dead vegetation after I just progressively corrected my pH through that gear. And then I mowed over top of it, and I used the tires of that riding lawnmower to pack everything down as I was going around. So I was making like 6-inch passes the whole way around a half acre food plot. And it just packed everything right down. And I'm here on the east coast of Virginia, you know, coastal Virginia, and I'm on an island basically, and I have sand. You know, most of my soil is sand with a little bit of clay and then gravel underneath that. So, you know, you want to talk about soil moisture just disappearing real quick. But, you know, that's it. And I fertilized when I seeded. And then that's all, you know, per the soil sample. So that would be the kind of the steps is soil sample, start amending that soil, start killing the seed bank, and then seed right into it and just mow it down or cultipack it down if you can. And you don't need a fancy $1,000 you know, cultipacker. I use a 36 gallon lawn roller now, but this tires of my ATV or your riding lawnmower will work just as well. It takes a lot longer. It took me about 2 hours, but I mean, you know, sometimes we got to do it, you know, like that. And that was just to ensure really good seed to soil contact. You know, there, you can seed and just mow right over top of it. Or just seed right into it and hope something comes up. And those things work because the rain can push a lot of these smaller seeds down to the soil. So.
Yeah, I've got a picture of the step-by-step process you sent me. I took a screenshot in preparation for this. And then after that, you were like, it's really that easy. And I was like, I mean, I'll give it a try, man. Like, I went and bought my backpack sprayer, and I sprayed like 4 acres with a 4-gallon backpack sprayer, and it took it took 1,000 years. It took so long. And after I did that, I was like, all right, step one done. And you were like, all right, 10 to 14 days after seed into it. And I came back down. I walked back down to my back 40, and I looked out, and I was like, oh my gosh, what have I done? I was like, everything's dead. This is the worst idea I've ever, like, there's no deer's ever going to come back here again. I was like, I just couldn't wrap my head around the fact that life was going to come back again. I was like, it's all dead. This is all Jeff's fault. Everything's dead. This is a disaster. And I was like, all right, stick with the process. So
yep.
Seeded into it, bush hogged it, and then ran over back and forth, ran over it a million times. And then when I sent you pictures, I mean, it was, I remember when one of my best friends came down to hunt, he was hunting and I was putting the baby down, and I was like, how the food plots look? And he was like, it looks like an Irish Spring commercial. And I was like, yes, we did it.
Yep. Yep. But obviously Mother Nature has a lot to play into your success and my success last year. My food plot last year, this time looked like an Irish Spring commercial. And, I honestly don't have that right now, but I just don't have the rain this year. I've gotten less than a half an inch of rain in the last month. I've planted a food plot twice and still have very little sprouting. So obviously, you know, we can do everything perfect in the world. I can tell you the process. I can run you through the process. I can help people walk through it, you know, step by step. But if Mother Nature ain't cooperating, then you're going to be in trouble. But hopefully it's cooperating for you down there this year. It's not so much for me.
Yeah, for sure. We're getting some rain, so I'm feeling good about it, man. Perry, what process did y'all decide to use on your farm this year for your plots?
Yeah, we did very similar, almost identical to what you laid out. The one thing that I didn't get to do, which I know is kind of one of the most important steps, was that spray. I don't know about you guys, where I am, we have a lot of that Japanese stilt grass that likes to invade these shaded little, we have the same kind of deal, Jeff. We've got, you know, small little half acre, even like quarter acre, little micro plots tucked back into the timber. A lot of it's like old logging yards kind of deals, you know, a power line. And that stilt grass just has a way of getting in there and kind of taking over everything. We've kind of dabbled with food plots in the past, to varying degrees of success. And we have some perennial clovers and some other things that have, you know, managed to take hold. So I was hoping to spray just, you know, specifically the stilt grass, this year. And I could not find the herbicide that I was looking for. So I just did the same thing. I went in there, I took my lawnmower, my zero turn, and just mowed it real close. I just got an ATV harrow, you know, one of the little drag harrows. So I mowed it real close. I drug it with that. I seeded it. And then I went back over it with the ATV and the harrow, just going real slow and just, you know, back and forth, just like you're describing, trying to get that seed, you know, pressed down in there. And luckily we had a lot of the rain, you know, in the forecast a couple of days after that. Hopefully not. So it rained hard. I'm hoping all my seed didn't wash down the hill, but and I haven't been back up to check on it, but yeah, it's very similar to that same process you just described. Right.
Well, if you could have followed the process of spraying and leaving that standing dead vegetation and then mowing down over top of it, you may not be so concerned with washout at that point. And that's a big thing of you know, the no-till process, especially if you don't have like the cultic packers and the big heavy tractors and that sort of thing. You're really relying on that thatch layer as like to act as a mulch layer, and it insulates your seed, protects your seed from those washout storms that we get this time of year, the derechos and the cold fronts and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, where you get 3 inches of rain in an hour, you know all about those. But you know, and hopefully you have a success with it this year. But I think that, you know, that's another point. There's not always just one way of doing things. You use a drag harrow and you're obviously using that to take some of that thatch layer off so you could expose the seed to the soil. Cause if you were probably seeded right into that thatch that you had mowed down, you probably wouldn't have gotten a good seed to soil contact. So,
cause it wasn't sprayed. Probably,
right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, there's definitely plenty of different ways to get the results, and you know, in some soils call for, you know, different measures. I mean, we're all kind of deal with that. I mean, I do have a farm that I've been trying to help a buddy out with, and I've actually been bouncing stuff off a Jeff here that just has super, super sandy soil up on the, like half of the plot. And I've been having a horrible time trying to get it to take. So I basically did the no-till method like on that half of the plot this year. And I actually do have some decent germination. Now we've been plagued here in our part of the Midwest with next to no rain. We went almost 45 days without any measurable rain right around where I live and on my property. So it was a little bleak for a while, but we happened to catch a couple rains here recently that I think are not going to have the bulb size or the tonnage that we might have had in past years, but we are going to have plots to hunt over after all. But it was looking like maybe going to be a good year to hunt over some dirt. So I wasn't quite sure how that was going to go for a while. It was a little scarce for a while, but yeah, I think we're going to come out of that now. So, but, you know, certain soils, like Jeff said, that, you know, work in, you know, for different methods, right? I mean, if you work up the soil too much on some of those sandy soils, you're basically just taking all the moisture out of that soil. You know, that doesn't drain, that drains too quickly already anyway. You're not holding any moisture in there. So we use the thatch, you know, in that thatch layer to hold that moisture in there and to actually hold the seed, to get germinated basically. So, you know, in some other good soils, I mean, I have some plots on my farm that are in a bottom, area down close to a creek line. That's just good black dirt. If there's any moisture in that soil at all, even with working it up and tilling it, the seed germinates in a matter of a couple of days, not a problem. But it's just different, you know, way different soil conditions basically calling for different methods to try to get the results that you're looking for. So
yeah, that's something I didn't quite realize was just how diverse and like, I don't know if complicated is the right word, but like, there's a lot of options out there for how you want to plant your food plots.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot that you have to understand. I kind of just thought like, I was like, oh, I like to garden. Like, this will be all right. Yeah. No, it's like, it gets way more complicated and you can go down like a lot of rabbit holes here. And, you know, like, would you consider yourself, Jeff, like the equipment guy, or like, are you more of a traditional like tilling food plot guy?
Yeah, I do more working of the soil, I guess, than I don't, like I said, I do it all with ATV type equipment, but I do have, like a spring tooth harrow and a disc that I pull behind, you know, the ATV to actually work the soil. And then I also do have, like a cultipacker that I pull behind the ATV to cultipack the seed in once I've seeded. Now I still do, hand seed everything with, like a solo spreader or, you know, one of the little Scott's green ones. Sometimes I find you have better control with even just a little hand spreader on some of the stuff. Depends on what you're planning, like a plot screen or something like that. I like to use a little teeny Scott's handheld one just because you can see what you're doing and you can control it really well, you know. I would say for the most part, I do actually try to work up the soil a little bit. So I would, you know, I would spray, like Jeff mentioned, to kill all. So, you know, it depends on where you're planting your plot. If you're going to start in an area that you have a lot of weeds and stuff like that, I would try to mow those weeds down as short as you can and then spray them to kill them, you know, to burn everything down. I would try to spray it a couple times if you can. And then, of course, I would try to work up that soil a little bit, seed everything, and then take the cultipacker over everything. Is kind of would be, you know, my method of planning how I do most of it. Like I said, sometimes that varies just on what your soil types and stuff are.
Right. So if you were looking for like limited equipment, totally doable with an ATV and a set of discs on the back of that thing, ATV discs.
Yeah, absolutely. If I were to only have just a few pieces of equipment, the sprayer obviously is number one. I mean, a mower, a sprayer, and a cultipacker, you could probably about do everything. Or a lawn roller. Lawn roller works too. And something to get that seed to soil contact is what you're after. The disc part you can do without, but you can absolutely do a lot of stuff with an ATV disc. You know, it varies from a tractor just by the fact that you can't put down pressure on it. You know, you don't have enough weight to it. Sometimes cutting brand new plots are a little bit difficult with like an ATV disc. You have to make a lot of passes or something to get it broke up just because you can't apply down pressure to it or add enough weight to it. But you absolutely can still do everything with ATV equipment. But yeah, I mean, pretty reasonable and minimal equipment. You can still accomplish a lot of things. So
what would you guys say would be like what's your like number one tip for success for someone trying their own food plots? Is that seed to soil contact like a number one?
Yeah, that's got to definitely be right up there. And then knowing your soil, that soil sample or just knowing what kind of soil you have is probably right up there too. But yeah, I mean, if your seed doesn't get to the soil, you're not going to get very far either. So those are probably, you know, two major things.
I'd say they'd be hand in hand. I mean, knowing your soil and seed to soil contact, because you're not going to get anything to grow unless you get seed to soil contact, and you're not really going to get anything to develop past germination if you don't have soil that, you know, that admitted the soil at all or done anything to help that soil to unlock the nutrients. And we got a product for that we'll get into here in a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. I want to talk about that for sure. Then I want to talk about what I planted, and I want you guys to tell me I did a great job.
I hope you did, because I suggest what you should order.
we'll see what he says. Lord. All right, so your full potential, is that what you're referencing?
Yes.
All right, talk to me about that.
Full potential is a combination of humic and fulvic acid. The humic acid will add all the micronutrients and basically help your plants, strengthen your roots of your plants, and then also allow the soil to help your plants better uptake water and nutrients. And the fulvic acid part of that actually will unlock your soil. It's kind of strange to explain, but soil can be locked out from nutrients to where you can't get certain nutrients out of the soil to your plants. And the fulvic acid part of that will actually unlock your soil's nutrients and allow your plants to uptake all the available nutrients in it. It's very... it shows very good results in people that have like sandy or poor soil or acidic soil and stuff like that, to try to help your plants basically get the nutrients that they need and strengthen your plants. Also helps in drought situations for plants that are existing. Now, of course, you still need water to get your plants to take off, but it does help on plots like clover plots or something that are already established. It helps those plants uptake as much water as they can possibly uptake out of the soil when you do have moisture available. So it's just a really good product. It's kind of it's not used a ton in the food plotting industry yet. I would foresee a lot of things coming from that type of a product. I think a lot of people still don't know about it. It's used quite widely in gardening and different things like that. People use that product a lot for that kind of thing. Farmers do use some of it in the agricultural world in different forms as well, to help obviously with the same type situation. But it's really taken off, I think, it will be taking off in the food plot ding world, just because there's so many different things that people can do to try to you know, get benefits from or try to increase. I mean, you're looking to increase your yield and your palatability, just like a regular farmer is looking to do the same thing. You're looking to do that as well on your food plots, and that's what we're trying to get to. So it's just a great product to help with that.
What's the application rate and process for that like, or is that just entirely dependent on the results of your soil sample and your specific situation with your soil type, et cetera?
No, so it's actually a product basically. So I sell it in a 32 ounce container, and that 32 ounces will cover 1 acre. So basically what you need to do as the customer is figure out like your sprayer situation, basically how much liquid you need to spray 1 acre, and then you would add that 32 ounces of, you know, of chemical to your sprayer to apply to 1 acre of ground. So, I mean, me personally, I can cover an acre with about 15 gallons out of my sprayer. So I'll add that 32 ounce container to my 15 gallons of water and make sure that all gets applied to that acre. So it just a little bit depends on how your sprayer is calibrated. Out of like a backpack sprayer, you would just have to know how many tanks you're going to take to cover, you know, that 1 acre of ground. And then you would, of course, apply and mix it accordingly, I guess. So, yeah, that in it, but it's one thing that you can't overdo it, I'll say, in kind of a weird way. I mean, you don't want to just go crazy with it, but you also can't overdo it. It's not something that's going to harm your plants. It won't like burn your plants like nitrogen might or something like that. It's not something that will harm your plants if you put too much on it, or if it's even in direct contact with your plant foliage. It works as a soil conditioner, but it also is fine as a foliar application as well.
So is this something you apply to existing plants as they're coming up?
Yeah, you can actually apply it at any point in time. That's kind of the benefit of it. Okay. So you can apply it at planting, you know, to bare soil, or you can apply it, you know, multiple times through the process if you want to. I mean, you could apply it at planting to your bare soil as like a soil conditioner. You could also apply it to your plot. Let's say later on down the road, after your plot's up and growing and you want to hit your plot with some liquid fertilizer, you can add Full Potential to your liquid fertilizer and put it down then as well, as all you're doing is just, you know, increasing basically the work that it's going to do to your soil.
Gotcha. That's awesome. That sounds super cool. How did you come up with that?
I mean, it's just one of those things where I actually, you know, had kind of started looking into it and researching different things that would help with, you know, your yield or your plant root strength, or even in those conditions like we talked about, like drought type conditions, looking into try to strength products. And after just kind of researching that and getting into that, those products I found were used a lot for that. And then of course, once I kind of figured out what they were and what was going on, I really nerd out about it, you know, and you know, it's one of those things. That's kind of the fun part of what I do, I guess, is after I, you know, it's like different seed mixes and stuff. Once I get something in my head or, you know, I just kind of go for it and start researching it and really dive into it, reading tons of articles, doing research, talking to people, you know, agronomists, different things like that, to try to get as much information I can about the products, and then also just trying it myself, you know, and seeing results from it. So that's kind of the fun part about it. I mean, you know, it's all almost like that research and development type stuff that you do on anything. And then once you find out that that's going to be a good product or a good working product, then you actually, you know, bring it forth for other people to use.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, 'cause I've had those similar kind of thoughts, like, man, it would just be so much fun to try to dream up these crazy, you know, these crazy mixes and see what would work well. And, you know, you see, like, you get on the forums and you see these different groups and pages, just like, you know, how you and Carter got hooked up, Jeff. It's like, you see people ask questions and they'll get this like, oh, well, you have to do it this way. You have to use this seed. You have to plant this exact, you know, thing for this situation. And it's like, well, that could vary depending on your soil type, where you are, what your, you know, the time of year. There's difference between spring plantings and summer plantings and fall plantings and all these things. And so, you know, to have that, to be able to have that creativity to, try different things, see what works for you, see what works in different places. You know, it sounds like a lot of fun. And I think that'd be, I was just curious, you know, what that process looks like for you.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. I mean, we're always trying different stuff. I'll have, you know, some of the guys that I work with, you know, help me out with that stuff, to try some of those different mixes and stuff in different parts of the country too, just to see what kind of results we're getting. I know, like the Quick Start Clover, for example, Jeff planted a little test plot of that out at his place there, and you know, just to kind of see the results we were going to get out in that part of the country, because it obviously is different from the Midwest here. So, you know, it's fun to see that happening in different places, and then to get those results, and then if we need to, you know, make adjustments to it to help better it, then we do that as well.
Yeah, and speaking of Nagel, I planted the 10 ring and I planted the Quick Start Clover. That's what I went with from y'all. Okay. This year.
Nice.
And tell me, why did I do that?
Why did you do that?
Yeah.
Well,
those are good mixes.
This is the plan. Did you plant them all in the same plot, or did you plant them in separate plots?
I planted them in the same plot.
Okay. Obviously, the 10 ring product, and Jeff can, you know, go off the top of his head of what all is in the mix, but that just is like your smorgasbord mix. That's just going to be like a little bit of everything. Your grains, your clover, some beans and some peas and stuff in there as well. And it's just one of an all around great mix. And then the Quick Start Clover, I'm kind of proud of, because that was something that Jeff and I spent a bunch of time on Facebook messaging back and forth, a bunch of time on the phone messaging back and forth, just because I felt like we needed a product where people wanted to see a little bit more instant gratification, not instant, but quicker gratification when it came to a clover product. We had another product out there that Jeff had been, it's just absolutely killer clover mix, but it's slow. It's really slow establishing. So that Quick Start Clover, I grew in my side yard, no soil test, in the test plot that Jeff mentioned, and it was a 10 by 10 area, and I tested it out in next to my house, no-till method, and in 6 weeks, I had 6 to 8 inch tall clover that was thick and full and good to go, and we knew at that point it was just going to be killer, because there's not a whole lot of clover mixes out there that are going to give you those type of results in six to eight weeks. And I had planted it in May, late in the year in Virginia. You know, we're already getting 85, 90 degree days. The soil temperature was close to 70 degrees, the high 60s, mid 60s, maybe 70 degrees in different spots. And it was still successful. So we knew it was just going to be killer at that point. So the reason I suggested those to you, just because you had the smorgasbord mix, just to see what the deer, you know, would prefer down there. And then the clover mix is always a good deal to go with. So, you know, you might find that there's things in the 10 ring that your deer love, and there's other things they might not touch. So it's always a good experimental mix to throw out there to see what your deer would really like. So, and then, you know, follow up next year with all the clovers that are in the 10 ring, and then the Quick Start Clover, you can come through with, you know, if you have any stuff that's still lingering, like any of the grains or anything like that, you can come through with, you know, like our clover cure, which is, you know, for grasses and grains and stuff, and kill that stuff. And then you can come back and have a great clover stand after that and be a little bit more easy maintenance that way. So,
yeah, that's what I was going to add to that. So adding Quick Start into the 10 ring, you're going to basically see the benefits from that next spring, as far as the fact that you'll have a strong stand of clover following up that 10 ring. So your 10 ring is your fall plot, you know. What you're hunting over this year is basically the 10 ring, which also does have a couple clovers in it. But the rate isn't as high because you have all the other things that are in the 10 ring. So you add the Quick Start to it, and now what you're going to have is clover that will come on strong in the spring. So you'll basically go in there in the spring and mow down the leftovers of the small grains and the Milo and stuff that are in the 10 ring. And if you want to, you'll be able to continue that as a clover plot for the duration of the summer or even further on, if you want to take it that far, you know, you could overseed more clover into it than if you wanted to continue that plot for years to come, if you really want to. But if you want to just get into a rotational basis, you would have that clover in your plot all summer long feeding deer. And then next fall, you would go back into that with a fall type blend again. And your clover's been putting nitrogen and other nutrients in the ground over the summer as well. So it's there's a ton of benefits for doing it that way. You're also helping keep weeds in check a little bit with that clover. They're going to help choke out a lot of the weeds. You can maintain it by mowing, which also helps with weeds. So the benefits are very long with that style of planting that you did.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I'll walk down there and take some pictures for you guys, but I took the dog down there yesterday and it was already green and coming up a little bit. So that was always reassuring to see. And yeah, I'm really excited. Definitely going to keep an eye on it. What else do you guys want to showcase here? Why are your sugar beets sold out, Jeff?
you know, here's the thing. Sugar beets are one of those things. They're planted early in the year. You know, I don't know if a lot of people know it, but sugar beets have like a 100 day type maturity rate. And so, a lot of people, this is kind of a misknown thing in the food plot industry, I guess, but they're in a lot of mixes that people plant in the fall, and you're really not getting much out of the sugar beets when planted that late in the year. I mean, if sugar beets are done right, they should go in the ground like back in early June, maybe, you know, that time of the year to get that 100 day maturity out of them to where they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. So the big order that I had in for that seed, I sold out of, and I figured we were late enough in the year that I didn't want to continue. I try not to carry a ton of, that's another thing about being kind of the small seed company that I am. I like to keep everything as fresh as I can possibly keep it from the grower, just because I don't like to have people lose that germination and stuff. Of course, I test it like crazy to make sure that I don't lose germination. It's stored properly. It's sealed up, you know, all those different things. But I don't like to carry piles and piles of seed over to the next, you know, year for buying, because that stuff will lose a little bit of shelf life. I mean, not a ton, but it can lose some, and I don't like to do that. So if I can, of course, as we're growing now, we're starting to do things earlier and earlier as a company. So I start to do some trade shows and stuff like that a little bit earlier in the year. So I do obviously have to carry some over, but I take extra precautions in making sure that stuff is taken care of properly, to make sure that nobody's missing out on, you know, quality seed. I mean, that's where I pride myself is the highest germination rates that I can get my hands on, and you know, the quality and purity in the seed, try to, you know, as few weeds as, you know, weed seed as possible. Obviously no noxious weeds of any kind. I won't accept things if the germination rate is too low. It's just what I pride myself in. So that's why the sugar beets are sold out, long story, but and a few other things are probably going to be that way too. And then this year has been a little bit of a goofy one for a few different types of seeds. Last year there was bad growing years from some of the growers in different things. So I've had a hard time getting my hands on certain things this year. And so it's just been a little bit different, but again, that's part of, the difference between me and just any bag of seed that you're going to go grab off the shelf at Walmart. So, you know, that's kind of, like I said, I try to pride myself in making sure that the quality is there and that everybody's going to get the results that they want when they do get that seed in the ground.
And I think to expand upon that, Jeff, what you're really getting at is there, you won't bag or even buy or take in seed that has low germination rates, high weed seed percentages, or anything like that. So, you know, sometimes we have limited supplies of things just because we can't get our hands on the quality that we want and we need to be putting into our mixes, because, you know, we're not going to send something out the door that's at 65-70% germination rate. That's not helping anybody.
Right. You know? Yeah. I've seen in the past, you know, other things, like if you happen to go to a store and look and grab a bag off, sometimes you'll see stickers that are over top of other stickers when it comes to germination rates and stuff like that. And you already know that stuff's over a year old when you're at that point in the game. So, you know, you're just, you're taking a chance on what you're buying. Then I'm not going to tell you that everybody's selling you bad stuff. I'm just telling you that, you know, you're taking a chance at that. And I don't like to do that. So, that, you know, that's one of those things that there may be stuff that I do run out of at times, just because like Jeff said, I making sure that the quality's there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that mentality. As a small business guy myself, and obviously as Carter alluded to, Hunt Lift Eat is the same kind of deal. You know, it's a small organization kind of built from the ground up, and having that that pride in your product and not being willing to make those sacrifices, you know, having that direct line of transparency and communication with your customer base to say, hey, yeah, we're sold out of it because, you know, X, Y, and Z, the quality control wasn't there. And I wasn't going to sacrifice the product that you're going to get. You know, if, you know, as we've been talking through this, you know, it sounds like a lot of us are in the same position where, you know, just average guys, small time food plotters. And, you know, the worst thing is when you spend all this time and effort and you spend money to, you know, to go buy a product and it's, you know, it's our labor of love. This is our passion project. And then you go out there and you feel like you got ripped off because of an inferior product. And so having that pride, I think really comes through.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a peace of mind for me too. I know when a bag leaves me, that it's not going to be the seed's fault that it's not growing. Right. I mean, there's something else going on probably in your plot, you know, but whether it's a human error or your soil or Mother Nature doesn't cooperate, you know, really, for the most part, you just add water and that it'll grow, you know. I mean, that's, you know, kind of the bottom line. So it's a peace of mind for myself as well. But I also, you know, again, you, the consumer, if you're not getting the results that you're looking for, you're not going to come back and buy from me. The first thing that you're going to, you know, do is blame the seed. I mean, that seems to be the running case. You don't have to look very far to see, you know, to see that happening. And so I don't want that to be the case. I want it to be something else that went wrong, whether, you know, some chemicals got applied not properly, or, you know, Mother Nature didn't shed a drop of rain. It just happens, or something. You know, I don't want it to be the seed's fault, I guess. And so I try to get it every opportunity not to be.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate that. And, you know, we're rolling up on an hour here, but I definitely wanted to ask you before we take off here, maybe both of you can answer this. You alluded to it briefly and it may be your answer, but when guys are in these, you know, box stores and they're looking to buy food plot seeds, what's like one important piece of advice that you would give guys that they need to either pay attention to or look at, you know, before purchasing? Other than, of course, I'm telling folks to go buy Buck Fever Seed Company seeds, right? So that's number one. Go to Buck Fever and buy your seeds there. But, you know, you look at these labels and there's so much marketing, and like I was in Tractor Supply the other day and like the big giant buck on this bag of seed, and you flip it over and it's 89% ryegrass. And like, I wouldn't have known that existed. I wouldn't have known to look for that before talking to Jeff 2 years ago. So like, what's some advice that you guys would give?
Yeah. So that, I mean, Jeff can take some of this too, but that's probably looking to see what's in the actual bag. So flip the bag over and look at that seed tag. See what your percentage rates are in there. And then also look at your purity and basically your germination rate on there. I mean, you'll see right on that seed tag, what's in that bag as far as that goes. So yeah, obviously don't try to stay away from anything that has rye grass in it. People also will confuse that a lot with rye grain stuff, which is like your, obviously your winter rye, your oats, your wheat, all that kind of stuff, you know, is what I would call in the small grain category, but like your rye grain is obviously different from rye grass, but you do have a lot of people that use rye grass in their mixes. And I always relate that to the old, you know, shiny fishing lure that you buy when you go in and buy something where it kind of catches the fishermen and not necessarily the fish. So, you know, it's one of those deals where the rye grass, sure, it looks great in your plot. It's going to be bright green and it's going to grow like crazy in no time, but you're going to be fighting it for a while. And in my experience, and I've tried some other mixes side by side with some of my stuff, and all they have no interest in the ryegrass. There's no benefit to the deer, you know, as far as ryegrass goes. So stay away from that, and then just watch your percentage rates. Some of what you're buying, your percentage rates are really high on what I would call like a filler type seed, even your small grains, where that percentage rate is really, really high in there. Now, if you're looking for that kind of thing, fine. But if you're not, then just make sure, kind of pay attention to what you're looking for. There's a purpose for your small grains in some mixes. But what I'm saying is, you know, if you're not looking for a plot that's 89% winter rye, and you want some other stuff, pay attention to that percentage rate in there, just because that's what you're end up, you know, getting for what you're buying, basically.
Yeah. And just to reiterate, I'm on the same page with Jeff there, that the label is, you know, not what it says on the clear, on the plastic, on the backside or the front side of the bag, but the actual stickered, you know, seed quality label that's supposed to be on every bag of seed. If it doesn't, then definitely walk away. But look for that germination rate, look for the quality of seed, look for the noxious weed, look for the weed percentage, look for even how old it is. I can't tell you how many times I've walked up to a bag in Walmart or some other, you know, big box stores and picked up a bag that's 18 months, the germination rate was tested 18 months ago. Obviously that's not going to hold true to, you know, when you go pick up that bag, that germination rate. So that label is really what you're looking for. And what Jeff said, if you're looking for a product that is mostly grains, cool. That's fine. If you're a little bit later in the season and you're under the gun or you didn't quite get there, but if you're looking for something that's just a plain old, good mix or something like that, just don't, you know, look out for those, high percentage small grain mixes. So.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice, guys, and much appreciated. I mean, like I said, there's a lot that goes into it and there's always room for improvement and knowledge to be gained. So, mm-hmm. You know, never, don't be afraid to reach out and ask questions, because you might find a Jeff Nagel who's happy enough to help you and help you get some food plots on your property. So,
oh yeah. But and yeah, my question to you is, my final question for you is, have you retested your pH?
Well, here's the answer to that question. The answer,
here we go.
The answer would be no.
Okay.
Even though I should have, and I knew I may be rebuked or admonished for not doing so. I even felt bad when I was planning last week, and I was like, oh man, Jeff's gonna.
Well, you know what? Next time you go down to check it out, just pull out, you know, good little chunk of plugs and retest it. It's not ever a bad time to retest, and so that way this winter, you know, after the deer season, you know what you got to go in to, you know, try to attack if you got any. And I'm assuming down there where you're at, you're probably, your pH is still going to probably need some more help.
Yep.
More than likely. So,
well, considering I didn't do anything to fix it, I reckon it's going to need some help still. So.
All right.
Well, yeah. I'll send you the results and you can tell me what to do, man.
Jeez. All right. Well, I might start charging you.
Yeah, you should. I would.
You definitely should.
Send my bill to Perry, please.
Okay. Right. I got it.
But yeah, we're cruising up over an hour here, guys. This has been awesome. I really appreciate you guys jumping on here. And, you know, thanks to you, Jeff. You know, I'm a loyal Buck Fever Seed Co. Customer now. And, you know, I'm going to sing y'all's praises and that customer service and authenticity and, you know, the passion that you have inside your company and your project, Jeff, is awesome. And I love it. And that's, you know, that's where I like to support with my money. So you guys got me, and listeners, y'all should definitely go check them out. Do you guys have any closing thoughts for us here?
No, I just want to say I appreciate that. And you know, just want everybody to know that the same kind of thing. I mean, we, you know, we strive to have, you know, to have everybody have the quality and the results. Like I said, it doesn't do us any good not to. So, you know, anybody that's looking to, that has questions, that need, you know, wants help or whatever, to reach out to us, and we'll try to find you some answers. Even if I don't know them off the top of my head, I'm going to find somebody that does, or I'm going to figure it out myself and try to help you with it, because we want you to have those results. So, yeah, no, we really appreciate it. And I do, you know, appreciate you putting some stuff in the ground. We'll see what happens.
Heck yeah, man. We'll keep you updated. Jeff Nagel, you got anything?
Well, I just appreciate it. And I think we should do it again, because I mean, we talked about a few mixes, but there's still so many more that we got. And not that we just have like an overabundance, but I mean, we didn't talk about Foundation Trio Clover. We didn't talk about our Blueprint blend, which is the Brassica blend. I mean, you know, there's stuff we didn't get to. So, you know, maybe we need to do it again, where we just talk about the different products and prepare people a little bit for next year. So
absolutely. Yeah. We'll get this on the calendar, and we'll talk spring. And then, you know, maybe next spring we can talk ahead of schedule for planning this summer and fall, man. I actually bought some of the foundations recently, and I've got one more plot that I need to do. And that's going to go there. So I'm stoked about that.
Yeah, awesome.
Perry, what you got, man?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Nagel, we definitely should do it again. I wanted to ask about the screen blend that you have. I've been itching to start trying some different screens, and you guys got a bunch of stuff out there that we didn't get to. And it's one of those things, you know, you get a bunch of guys that can nerd out on food plots. You can kill some hours real quick. So,
oh yes.
Yep. And I'm looking forward to what you guys have planned for, you know, for the future, what might be in the works coming down the pipeline. So let's definitely do it again, guys.
There's a sweet mix that I think is coming out next year, right, Jeff?
We're doing a little work as we speak on some stuff. So there's going to be some changes happening after the first of the year. We're already implementing a couple of them, but we're changing a few things, and I think everybody's going to like it. So.
Awesome.
Heck yeah. We'll keep us in the loop, and we'll keep Hunt Lifty listeners in the loop. And Jeff Vanderheiden, where can folks find you guys on social media if they want to check you out?
Yeah, so buckfeverseedcompany.com is the website. And then also just, you know, at Buck Fever Seed Co. on Facebook and on Instagram as well. So I'm on those two platforms, and then the website as well. And both the website and the Facebook page are full e-commerce with shop and everything. So if you're looking to purchase, either one of those works. The website's probably a little bit more user-friendly than the Facebook shop is, but they're both available.
Awesome. Fantastic. Listeners, go check them out for sure. And, yeah, give us your feedback. And, you know, as always, we appreciate the hell out of you guys. And both Jeffs, looking forward to having you guys back on sometime.
Thanks for having us.